Hey, welcome to the Happy Ramp Podcast. I am Ted Kluck, joined, as always, by Barnabas Piper and Ronald J. Martin. And boys, it is a little early in the morning for us to be recording because of how busy and in demand we are as people, because of how difficult it is to schedule this program. We are going at an early hour, so if we sound a little bit more raspy and used up and tired than usual, that is why. But I'm excited about our topics this morning, boys. I feel like we've got a good slate of things to talk about. And we also have an amazing slate of sponsors and several to talk about. So, Piper, why don't you kick us off with another incredible promo read?
I like how promo reads are not like a segment.
Oh, it's a segment.
It makes me feel special.
It's basically the segment, you know. I would love to do a show. I would love to have so many sponsors that an entire episode is just promo reads. I think that's
listeners have actually suggested that, like finding products just to see if I can turn them into a promo of some kind, which
just to see if you can make magic. You know what that's the equivalent of, Piper?
What's that?
That's Larry Bird playing an entire game left-handed. Like exactly, you've gotten so bored because you're so good at like doing the promo reads. They have to become more and more challenging.
Right. Oh, we keep getting good promos like InterVarsity Press and a book by Mike Cosper. Please throw me some Frank McKinney just to see if I can do it.
Dude, right, throw us some hot garbage and see if we can we can turn it into magic. But tell us about Cosby.
All right, so yes, our first sponsor is IVP Books, and the book is Recapturing the Wonder by Mike Cosper. Listeners to this podcast might be familiar with Cosper since he's in the same circles we are. He's a friend of Ronnie and myself, and he has been part of the Sojourner Network. He may still be. He's the director at Harbor Media now. They do a bunch of podcasts and audio production. They have a couple of fantastic podcasts that have come out of there. But the book Recapturing the Wonder is he's basically looking at the experience that most of us who are, you know, who have been Christians for a while have run into of just sort of stale faith. And what does that come mostly from the culture and a culture that tells us we need things that are more concrete, more certain? Is it just from a spiritual disconnect? And so he's essentially inviting people into the spiritual disciplines as a way to engage with spiritual wonder. So what the eye-opening experience, the miraculous aspect of faith. So those genuine life-changing parts of faith. And he's a really good storyteller. He does a fantastic job of weaving in cultural examples and personal life examples. He's funny, but not in like a cheeky, like, you know, pastor kicks off his sermon with a joke. Everyone, you know, chuckles and then he moves on to nonsense. Mike's actually funny. So it's just a really good book for sort of enlivening the spiritual life. It's not a, you know, seven steps to anything kind of book. Ronnie, I think you said I think you read it cover to cover a while back. And is there anything that stood out to you about it other than Mike is great?
Yeah, I read it. I read it on my Sabbat, and it was
which one, baby?
that would be my winter Sabbat.
The winter. Yeah,
it was the shorter one. It was the 2.5 month one.
It was one of 117 books you read while you were lying on the beach somewhere.
Exactly. Yeah, one of my 25. But yeah, I really loved it. It was one of my favorite books I read this year. Yeah, everything you said, I totally agree with. I think there is just, you read a lot of spiritual discipline books, or some of us do. And by far, this one had, I think, the most, this one sort of impacted me the most because, again, it wasn't like, you know, sometimes spiritual discipline books play out like leadership books where they just give you like 19 principles and you feel very dry and it's very forgettable.
And we'll get to leadership in a minute.
Yeah, absolutely.
We're learning a lot about that.
This one kind of falls more into Eugene Peterson, Contemplative Pastor. It has some touches of one of my favorite books, Zach S. Wine's Imperfect Pastor. And just so it really kind of aims at the heart and it gives you things to think about rather than do. And that's that really resonated with me.
Which is kind of the point of spiritual disciplines, because they're not just spiritual practices, which is I avoid spiritual disciplines books until I've heard a really compelling reason to read them, because they usually just are tiring to me.
Yeah.
Cosper's writing is not, and what he invites people to is not. So again, the book is Recapturing the Wonder by Mike Cosper. It's from IVP We appreciate their sponsorship. And
our boys, I have a question about right. Cosby. I'm looking at his image now. I'm the only one in the room, as it were, who doesn't know him. I'm confused by something.
Okay.
How cool is Cosby? How cool is this guy? Like, do you leave a meeting with him going, oh my gosh, that guy's cool. That guy's so cool. Cause I can't tell by the picture, like if he's cool or if he's kind of dorky. Like, what are we looking at there?
He's like dorky cool in the sense of like, okay. he's not trying to be cool. Like you don't walk in and feel like, oh, he's presenting an image.
That guy's doing persona work.
Right. Yeah. Very, very. I have not gotten that impression from him at all. Ron is much more persona oriented than Cosby is. He's a much more well branded person.
Dude, so Ron is kind of the Mendoza line for persona work. This works.
No, I think Ron is well above the Mendoza line in persona work. Let's be honest.
Thanks, boys.
I don't
Thanks
know
the encouragement.
I don't know.
I need to go back and read Recapturing the Wonder now to get some affirmation.
Exactly.
Recapturing the Dignity.
Yeah, exactly. No, I agree, though. I agree with what you said about I think that was accurate, man, about Cosby. He's just sort of like not trying to be cool but super nerdy. You know what he is? He's kind of what I call – he's kind of a new category of man. We can talk about this on another ep, which I call – he's very fanboy. So he wears his loves on his sleeves. And so he's one of those kind of guys where, you know, he mentions, you know, some – he'll mention like a particular like band or a TV series, you know, and, you know, he does the whole like, you know, this thing just kills me. I love this. Oh, I was dying. If I met this guy, I would die. When I saw this TV series, you know, it had such a major effect. So he's kind of this, he's like this new category of like, you know, fanboy, to where he's massively influenced by the things he loves and does good.
It would seem that he has recaptured the wonder about lots of things.
Wow. Huh. Wow.
There you go. See, that's why Piper is the Larry Bird of the promo read. I mean, there's
left-handed today, boys. Left-handed.
Left-handed. Exactly.
Yeah. That felt a little left-handed to me, to be honest. my comment about
your persona work was very left-handed.
Very left-handed. Yeah.
Tell us about our other sponsor.
All right. Our other sponsor is Noah's Event Venue. You've heard about them on this show before. For those of you who are in specifically a church context, so church plant, growing church, looking to, you know, you need to find a new place to meet either for size reasons or just need a better facility, Noah's Event Venue provides those all over the country in most major metro areas. They own buildings that are set up for groups to meet in. So large meeting rooms with all the audiovisual. They have classroom space, kitchen space. Even cafe space, although it looks a little bit more like cafeteria space, if I'm being honest. The rooms they're just sort of classy and nice, so you can hipster them up. You can, you know, you can hang your Christian flag up. You can do whatever it is that your church feels is the best way to decorate for service.
You can hang your framed moss up.
It's right. You can. Yes, their metallurgy is fine. Ferns on the wall. Bronze statues of reformers, whatever it is that you want to steal from Sojourn Church, all of it's acceptable. So if you go to Noah Event Venue, that's Noah like Noah and the Ark, noaeventvenue.com/church, you can find out more. If you're not a pastor, but you know that your church is in a situation where you have venue questions, go ahead and just send the link to them and tell them that the Happy Rant podcast says you're welcome.
There it is. Boys, we are thankful to have two amazing sponsors kind of in the boat at the same time, and we would love to continue that trend. So if you have a product or a service and you're interested in hopping on board this fame rocket ship while it is ascending, definitely let us know. Boys, we have some other things to talk about regarding fame. And the first one is this propensity for pastors who have maybe kind of timed out of the pastoral gig for one reason or another to transition then into being leadership coaches. Leadership coaching seems to be kind of the sexy career of the moment, the kind of career that allows you to like be on a stage pointing very enthusiastically and like be in your office writing on glass and making like flow charts and doing those sorts of things. And I guess I want to kick this discussion off by talking about A thing that I've noticed. So all my best friends, most of my best friends in the world seem to be pastors, which is a really cool thing, man. I love these guys. I get to be a part of their lives and glean their pastoral wisdom. And Lord knows I need a lot of that. But one thing I've noticed among all these guys is that they tend to think of themselves as like Uber leaders. Like, i.e., they're always reading the Winston Churchill biographies, and they think that if things had broken differently, they would be like, you know, Ulysses S. Grant leading men into battle.
They basically are the team of rivals.
Right, they are. And so instead of, like, sitting in an office prepping a sermon, which is what they actually do, they really think, you know, in a different life, I could have been, you know, Norman Schwarzkopf. I could have been, like, leading troops into battle. And it just seems to be an interesting personality trend that I've noticed among most pastors. So, Ron, as a man of the cloth, like, have you seen this? But also, like, do you ever see yourself transitioning into leadership coaching?
Dude, that's really funny. Yeah, because obviously I'm like you, Big T. I know a lot of dudes that sort of self-identify as, you know, what I really want to do, what my real gig is, besides prepping sermons, is coaching leaders, right?
Yeah, like, hey, I'm a leader of men, you know?
Yeah, I'm a leader of men.
That's who I am.
Right? Yeah, it feels all Middle Earth every day.
Right? Yeah, very Middle Earth, right.
But I don't know. Yeah, I just think it's, especially with the current trend of the kind of leaders we have where everything is leadership, leadership, leadership. And I don't resonate with it at all personally, man. If I'm being honest, I'm not like the big, like, leadership guru guy. I don't, you know, I mean, whatever. I'll talk to a guy. If you know, somebody calls me with some questions, I'll talk to him, but I don't see myself as being like this guy that's going to have all of these, you know, 19 steps of leadership to offer pastors at like any given moment, you know, and guess what? The book's coming out on IVP next week. And, you know, I don't feel like I have any of that, but I'm surrounded by a lot of guys, depending on their personalities, that definitely are either doing this or they're looking to do this. Mm-hmm. This is what's ironic. Now, this is what I get. I get these kind of dudes. They talk to me asking me if I see these qualities in them.
And they're like,
yeah,
like, hey, have you ever thought of me as, you know, the next Ulysses S. Grant? I mean, just asking for a friend, you know?
Absolutely. Like, yeah. Like, am I the next Grant? And do you see these qualities? And what do you think? And I'm just like thinking, so you're talking to the non-leadership coach guy to tell you if you're the leadership coach guy.
Yes,
so it's exactly. There's some irony there. I don't know what it is.
Do you think there's a subtext of, like, someday, do you think you could follow me? Since you're not really a leader guy.
Absolutely.
Like, do you ever see yourself following me? That's really the subtext of the question.
So check this out, guys, really quick, man. So I have like a, there's a story about, this is years ago, and this guy who is, again, it doesn't, you know, age is not a big thing, but this guy is, let me just say, significantly younger than I am. And he visited me one time. And he sat down and we're just talking, man. We're just shooting the breeze, man. We're talking, you know, what did you, we're talking about football. We're talking about what I talk to guys about, right?
Yeah.
And at one point he goes, you know, hey, just letting you know, if you, Ronnie, if you need any coaching, you need leadership coaching, I just want you to know that I'm available for you. And I'm literally thinking, like, isn't it like your 14th birthday next week? Like,
dude,
like,
right. Even though I'm 24, I've never led my way out of a paper bag. I mean, but I will be your leadership coach. I'm just,
yeah, waiting. I thought that was, so, and again, that sounds all arrogant and I didn't mean it to sound like that, but I'm looking at this guy and I'm like, I think I'm good. You know, I think I'm good.
Well, I think the problem is that people think that leadership is a thing. Like, it's a profession. It's like, leadership is not a thing. It's a thing that happens when you do other stuff. It's like, if you are a pastor, that's the thing you do. And then leadership happens. And it can happen badly if you have bad character, or heck, it can happen well if you're humble and you listen to people around you. Same if you're like a professor or a coach. Like, there are coaches who are bad leaders, but coaching is the thing that they do. And when the young guy's like, I can give you leadership coaching, that I think he thinks of it as like a skill set. It's like saying, I can teach you how to use grammar. Well, that's not how leadership works.
So here's what I think. Here's one of my theories about it is that, what I think, this is what I found to be true with not with every guy, but with some of these guys that are kind of looking you know, to the horizon for what they might do. I think for a lot of pastors, it's that they're not comfortable pastoring, because pastoring is very much like, dude, you're in the gutter, you're living life with the people that God's, you know, put mm-hmm. under your care. It's really hard. It's gut-wrenching. Leadership yeah. coaching, dude, you're on the phone for an hour with a dude, you hang up, you don't have to give it another thought. And I think for a lot of guys that really struggle in terms of the pastoral role of what they do, this is just yeah. this just feels like an easier, more enjoyable fit.
All leadership coaching is corporate consulting with a sanctified spin.
Yeah.
I have the same feelings about consultants that I do most leadership coaches, in the sense that it used to be that those who can't do teach. Now it's those who can't do consult. And the same goes for leadership coaching. It's like, oh, you didn't do your job very well. You failed. You were run out of a church. You whatever. So now you're going to go tell other people how to do it. You get paid more money. You get to do it on your schedule. And you have zero vested emotional or spiritual interest
yeah.
in that organization, which is not how the church is supposed to work, just to be clear.
I mean, it's going to be hilarious in like 5 years when one of us is like doing leadership coaching.
Dude, I hope we all are, if it's what Pipe just described. It sounds like these guys have it figured out, man.
Well, here's the thing. I've thought about moving that direction. I mean, because any of us are in a spot where we could make that transition. I mean, it would require a hustle. Like, you end up having to do yeah. a bunch of like business startup hustle, which is part of it's the crappy part of the job. But if you have a name of any kind, so you have a certain level of influence, you know, you are branded, you have put out enough content of some variety that people like, so books, music, sermons, lectures, whatever, and you know, it's basically that, and then can you spin it into, I can show other people how to do this. And the thing is, you don't even have to have leadership experience to be a leadership coach. You have to have like public speaking experience.
Ideas.
You have to have ideas. You have to have content. So like you've written right. a book about Mike Tyson. You can go be a leadership coach because you published a book.
Right.
And
what can boxing teach us about leadership? You know,
I could
take that angle.
Seven leadership lessons from Mike Tyson. You know, you could probably build a whole, you know, you could probably build a whole business structure around that.
Numbers 1 through 4 are don't rape anybody.
that seems timely in today's culture. Also, it doesn't seem to really bring leaders down at the highest levels of government, but you know, that's a separate issue.
That's why
I feel comfortable right now.
Yeah, generally speaking, when one brings up rape, the conversation does get less comfortable. Lessons.
Sorry, guys.
Don't go to jail. Also, a good lesson. Etc. Etc. But it's the thing that baffles me is that people hire these guys. So it's hard to blame them for going into it, because it's like, if you can get money for talking about a thing that you weren't very good at in the first place, go yeah. for it, I guess.
All kidding aside, don't you think there's an element in this of, like, we all, at the end of the day, we all want to feel like some sense of what we're doing for a living is sexy or glamorous, or like there's something cool about it. And you know, like you said, Ron, very articulately, I think pastors have a hard job. Like, and I can speak to that, having, you know, had several best friends who are pastors. Like, they work really hard. Their work is often, you know, thankless and unglamorous. And you know, don't you think this leadership coaching, it sort of gives you license to dream? You know, you get some slickster who like comes to your church and, you know, instead of leading you into battle, leads you into a conference room and tells you how amazing your ministry could be. And I mean, it's almost like it's like a little vacation of the mind, you know, and you get to think of yourself like Winston Churchill for like a week and a half. And, you know, maybe that's worth the $10,000 that you're paying for it. And, you know, and I say that with all sort of sincerity. I think, you know, I could use a little more like thinking of myself as Winston Churchill in my life.
Yeah. I mean, I guess if you want to pay $10,000 for a pep talk to feel better,
yeah, I guess,
go for it.
I guess that's what it is. Yeah.
One of the things that, so kind of looking at it from the other side, so the people, I think it confuses me when churches hire these people, in the sense that like, they don't do a lot of background work to see what is the track record of this person? What is the, mm-hmm. you know, what impact have they had on the churches they've consulted? Because the thing about being a consultant is, or a coach in this case, you come in, you throw out your information, and it's completely on the church to do any sort of changes, fix anything, yeah. change their direction, whatever. Well, that's, you know, that means that the consultant is always innocent of the failure to do anything with their stuff. So that's one side of it that's weird. The thing that gets me is, what is it that drives a pastor? Like, if you get burned out on ministry, you leave a church. So let's say there's not a moral failure. It's not, you know, you weren't sleeping with your secretary, you weren't stealing money or anything like that. You leave the ministry because you're just burned out. And 6 or 9 months later, you're now leadership consulting. Like, is ministry just a drug? Like, you can't kick the habit? What is it? If you're burned out on it, why do you want to go feed into the rat race for other people? What's the psyche behind, I can't do this anymore, so I'm going to go make other people do more of it? Like, I would say
I can't do this anymore. And the problem is it's the only thing I know how to do. So I have to do something that at least leans into, you know, the giftings that I've, you know, built and accumulated up to this point, which is just talking to people, counseling people, you know. So it's like, I remember one guy said, what do all pastors do when they stop being pastors? Well, they either become profs, they become district superintendents. He listed off like these five things. They become leadership coaches, because it's just all things that they can do since their skill set is so incredibly narrow. Being a pastor.
The thing is, a good pastor's skill set is not incredibly narrow. Their interests are incredibly narrow.
But in terms of like what they've been doing the last 5, 10, 15, 20 years, like, you know, where, you know, in going into the business world, you know, what kind of company is going to look at their resume and go, oh, great, you know, you look like you'd be great for
Lifeway.
You
know.
I meant besides
Christian
Lifeway.
Publishers as a whole.
Yeah. I meant besides that, you know.
No, I mean, there is truth in that. It would be nice if the corporate world recognized that if you are a pastor of a church of, say, and you know, anything greater than like 50 people, you have management skills, you have communication skills, you have lead, or at least experience. Maybe the skills are. So there's, I mean, you have a toolbox of skills that can be applied to the things. My thing is that it's like pastors, they just keep coming back to the same gig in different formats. And if you leave the ministry, I'm assuming it's because you believed you're not called to the ministry. If you believed you're called, you would stay. Otherwise, you're disobeying God, right? So, but they keep coming back to this thing that they're not called to, just in like some sort of more profitable bastardized form. And it's very strange to me. It's like, if this is not for you, like, go sell stuff somewhere else, you know. Mm-hmm. go be a corporate consultant, go be a branding manager somewhere, go be whatever. Like, there's a billion jobs. Go do
one, but those things aren't entrepreneurial. So there is always going to be something about the role of a pastor that's entrepreneurial. So, and you get to enjoy the fact that you get to, you know, make your own schedule and all of those things. So to move into something like leadership coaching, you would still have that. You would still have that sort of an opportunity, you know, for your life to be kind of how you get to sort of set it up and make it and have that freedom and all of those types of things.
Kind of like when you are a pastor and you get to like show up to the office whenever you want, you get to drink a lot of coffee with people and spend half your day reading books and commentaries and writing sermons, things like that.
Yeah, I mean, if I only did all that, that'd be great. But yeah, for the average guy, sure. But well, I'm right. Special. I'm an Enneagram 4.
You're trying to be a good pastor who, you know, like shepherds a congregation and stuff. So that's different.
And when I can get around to finally prepping that sermon, it's
great. If it gets prepped, it gets prepped.
Me and the rest of the guys that don't prep.
Just let go and let God, Ronnie. Let go and let God.
That's right. Boys, I've got an idea. I'm actually... You're really talking me into this leadership coaching thing, but I think my approach is going to be, I'm going to dress and act like a real old school football coach. So I will come into your boardroom wearing like really short polyester coaching shorts, from like the 80s or the early 90s. And
You're going literal.
I'm going to be a real coach. There's going to be a lot of upper thigh showing. I'm going to wear turf shoes. I'm going to wear tube socks pulled up to my knees.
With stripes around the top.
I'm going to have a whistle around my neck. And in the vein of a true old school nostalgic football coach, and this is going to be a seamless transition into our next topic. I will like scream at you, berate you, cuss you out. I will really coach you in the way that I was coached as a high school athlete in the 90s. So
cool.
That's my approach. Leadership coaching, the old school way with Ted Kluck. So, it's going to be magical, boys.
Yeah. You can call it like up downs with Ted Kluck or something like that.
Yeah. I'm going to make you do up downs in your boardroom. So on that nice industrial, like carpet or, you know, whatever you got going in your boardroom,
get these tables out of here. We're doing the Oklahoma drill.
That's right. We're going to do a little Oklahoma, a little Nutcracker, you know, right in the boardroom. So it's going to revolutionize your company. It's going to be amazing. Or your church.
I would pay $10,000 to see other church staff. Like, I would just be like, hey, can you go do this at that church? I want to see those people go through that.
Dude, yeah, to see your hipster music guy squaring off against your, like, you know, small groups pastor in the Nutcracker drill would be incredible. Who's your money on? Worship pastor versus small groups guy? Now, small groups guy, he topped out at small groups guy because he doesn't have, like, senior pastor material. Worship pastor is going to be super fey, super arty, super persona-y. Who do you take in an Oklahoma drill between those two people, Piper?
Small groups guy for sure, because there's a level of like low grade, unachieved, like,
self-hatred
status. Yeah. Like, ugh, yeah, I topped out at this. It's he's the middle manager of the church and just constantly wanting to be in the C-suite and can't get there. So yeah, the worship guy. I mean, he's just trying not to break a nail. So he's about to get destroyed.
Dude, the small groups pastor probably like wrestled a little bit in high school. You know, he wrestled, he threw the shot put, you know, he did a little something in high school.
Yeah, and if the worship leader wrestled in high school, it was for entirely different reasons, or because he had like a macho dad who was like, you will do a sport, and he throws him out there.
Oh, yeah. Dude, yeah, he had the macho dad, but he may have some angst built up because of that. But anyway, we're getting ahead of ourselves, boys. But I think we should all suss out our leadership coach personas and what that would look like. Maybe we can come back together in the next program and
leadership coaching. It'll be our next venture.
I like it. I think we should get business photos taken. You know what I mean? Like business leadership coach photos. Like us in front of, you know, like a glass wall that we've written some diagrams on. And, you know, I want to have a sport coat slung over my shoulder, and I want to be leaning against something.
You know, I have one of those because I did I was teaching a class, but it was in like an entrepreneurial business classroom. Ooh. And so, nice. You know, it has like that context. And so I've got like the open collar dress shirt, my sleeves rolled up. I'm pointing at one of those big like butcher paper flip chart things with the graph drawn on it. So
Pipe, like you've done this, dude. We're like going off on this and like you've done this. You're the guy.
So the guy. I was in a context where it looked like I was that guy. I've never claimed to be a leadership coach. I mean, if somebody wants to come and say, hey, help our church do things differently, here's, you know, $2,000 to $10,000, I'm not going to decline that. Money makes up for all the mockery I just made. But at the same time, I haven't done that.
Dude, yeah. All I'm saying is if you pay me $2,000 to $10,000 to revolutionize your church, I'm just saying your church is going to look a lot like a junior varsity football team in the 90s. They're all going to look the same. You know, they're all going to look the same. What's interesting to me about this, and one last comment, and then we'll transition into the next thing. I feel like more and more we live in a culture that doesn't want to be led, in the sense that like everybody's trying to telecommute, everybody's trying to work for themselves. Like, we're becoming more and more fragmented and less team oriented as a culture, but we have more coaches than we've ever had. I don't know. I just think that's kind of an ironic moment.
Well, that's one of the funny things about leadership coaches is if you paused for 30 seconds before getting excited about them, you would go, wait, who have they ever led successfully? Who are they leading? You know, most of the authors on leadership out there are not leading anybody. They have an entire brand built about talking about leadership, but they're not leading anybody in any definitive direction. It's like the greatest trick the market ever pulled is turning leadership into a product.
Yeah, no, I agree, man. That's pretty money for sure. But boys, speaking of 90s football coaches, I want to talk about a thing that seems to be sweeping the nation, and it seems to be sweeping college students in general. I see it every day in my work, and that is nostalgia. So I'm watching this incredible Netflix series. I sound like Cosby, you know, fanboying about what I'm watching. But the series is called Dark. It's a German kind of crime drama, and there's a time travel element to it, and it's super 80s, 90s nostalgic. You know, they're much like Stranger Things, taking you back into, you know, these worlds where people are listening to tape Walkmans and wearing mom jeans unironically. But today I see all of my college students being super nostalgic for the 90s, wearing like 90s style mom jeans as a right now fashion thing. And I just think nostalgia is fascinating in general. And what's more, like being nostalgic for an era that you never experienced firsthand. What do you guys think of this? Like, do you see it? And, do you think it's good? Do you think it's bad? Like, where do you see this?
Ron, I feel like you're kind of king nostalgia.
Well, yeah, but you know, it's so funny because there was a moment about, I don't know, 15 years ago when sort of the ironic, you know, nostalgia thing sort of entered into our culture. I don't think it's ever left. Yeah. I mean, and it used to be like, okay, so in the 80s when I was in high school, I remember there was a trend that kind of came and through my high school years where, you know, it kind of went back to the 50s a little bit and dudes were like, you know, cuffing their jeans and wearing boots. But it wasn't like a total throwback, right? It was kind of mixed with sort of a modern flair. And I feel like what happened was about a decade after that in the 90s, like nostalgia came back into the culture in a way that what they did was they just wanted to do a total copy of what was before. So you don't even get a mix now of a lot of nostalgia. Even in the music, you know, music has been so 80s influenced now for literally the last 15 years. And it's about being like as true to the era and the age as you can possibly be. So it's kind of taken this weird next level to where now when we see nostalgia or we see retro or vintage, you know, kind of things, it's all about, can you do it exactly? Can you attain exactly what it was? Instead of saying, well, no, let's keep it a little 2018, but then we'll add a little bit in from a trend from the past. I think that's super fascinating. And it says something about, you know, the American psyche for sure, which is like, what are we trying to recreate here? Like and again, you get you get more points for how authentic you are to exactly what it was. Now I'm dealing with, you know, I'm going into areas of music and fashion with all that kind of stuff, but I think it's blended into like even some TV shows, you know, there's this new show coming out called The Kids Are All Right. And it literally is like the Wonder Years, you know, it's a show of a family from the 70s, you know, narrated by the dude. And you just kind of go like, well, I mean, are they just trying to recreate what the Wonder Years was like verbatim? You know, without any sort of like nod to like, well, hold on, let's take that and let's update it and let's like do something that we can even make it, you know, we can kind of build on what that was and make it better. But right now, it seems like nostalgia and, you know, vintage, retro, it's all about, can we just do it exactly how it was from the past? I think that's super fascinating.
Yeah.
I think in television and movies specifically, every successful thing is a remake or attached to a franchise that's been around for decades. So Marvel, those are comic books going back to like the 40s and 50s. You've got Star Wars. That's a franchise that goes back to the 70s. You know, and then there's on TV, like there's a Hawaii 5-0 remake that's been out for several years. They're remaking Magnum PI because sadly was Tom Selleck the original Magnum PI?
Absolutely.
Yeah. Okay. So I'm sure I had that right. I pictured
the
mustache and then
the chest hair.
And then I could think of was Paul Tripp when I pictured a mustache, and I know he wasn't Magnum PI. So
dude, they should have cast Paul Tripp in the remake. I think Paul Tripp as Magnum PI would have been incredible.
He could definitely be a mustache double for Tom Selleck.
I mean, we'd all be watching it right now if that was the case.
Yeah. Let's recast all these nostalgic shows with reformed personalities.
I'm sorry. there are very few reformed personalities. There are reformed
people. I misspoke there. Yeah, I definitely misspoke.
Easy,
there.
Pal. Let's be careful with that. We're throwing out the word personality here.
That's right. Their persona work is not up to snuff.
Dude, so, like, for example, I think the kid from The Wonder Years should be, I think that should be Matt Chandler. Because he has a sort of eternal boyishness about him.
I would
think
have said Owen Strand because he just he gives off like that middle teenage angsty kind of thing.
Dude, no, Owen Strahan to me is Carlton from The Fresh Prince of Bel-Air. for obvious reasons and actually for two obvious reasons.
I want to see Owen Strand do the Carlton dance. That's what I want to see.
Actually, I think Owen Strahan would be, what was the show with Steve Urkel in it? Maybe he's Steve Urkel. Remember that?
I forget the name of the show, but.
Yeah, I just remember the character, not the show.
The Steve Urkel show.
No, yeah. Urkel had just more of the outsized, like, overt nerd personality. I mean, there's got to be somebody else who could do that.
Yeah, definitely. All right, let's. I'll throw a name out, and you guys cast him in an 80s or 90s nostalgic show. What about KDY? Where does KDY end up?
See, that's where the reformed personality phrase goes off the rails.
Yeah, that's true. That's true.
Oh, you know who he could be? He could be the principal from Saved by the Bell.
There you go. Oh, I like it.
I forget his name. Principal something or other. All of our listeners are shouting at their earbuds now. But
let's stay in Saved by the Bell. Who's the reformed Zach Morris?
Oh, dude. I would say that's J.D. Greer.
I agree. Totally J.D. Greer.
He came to mind. It's the thing is, all of like the rocked up people I can think of are non-reformed.
Dude, so, yeah, Zach Morris wasn't the rocked up one. Zach was the...
That's right. Yeah, I was thinking of Slater. Sorry. Yeah. See, well, no, Zach Morris is very clearly Matt Chandler.
Yeah. You know, you're right, man. The
boyish,
collars,
preppy, like, confident sense of humor. Yeah. Everybody likes him kind of thing. Like
everybody's bro. Everybody's favorite.
He kind of has more of that handsome kind of persona that Zach had. You know, that's not so much Chandler, right? I mean, I don't know. Yeah. You know, he has the blonde tips and everything, right? Or the gray tips now.
The gray tips. Nice.
Dude, so let's cast Slater. Like, who's the reformed pastor who's most, like, into lifting and being like, rocked up?
Beyonce Trump.
Well, dude, no, because he's a real athlete. That doesn't count. It's got to be somebody with just, like, beach muscles or just, like, photo shoot muscles. But no actual athletic ability.
Hey, Eric Mason.
He's, like, 60. It's hard because the reform guys are like so anti, you know, looking decent.
Yeah, the reform guy approach is like, I spend so many hours studying, I would never lift a weight because that would imply that I have hours that I'm not studying, right? All right, let me throw out another.
There is a pastor in the SBC, a guy named Clint Presley, who is. He wears like seersucker suits. He leans reform, but he's like a big weightlifter guy. Like he goes and does weightlifting with his staff and just lifts them under the bus kind of thing. And he has that sort of big athlete personality. He could pull it off, but he's not as well known as some others.
Dude, no, I like that though. That works because Slater wasn't quite as well known as Zach Morris, you know? There was a little sense that he was always in Zach's shadow, and that was a tough dynamic. How about Timmy K? Where does one Timothy Keller fall in the pantheon of 80s and 90s television?
I feel like he's the dad from Malcolm in the Middle.
Okay,
I was gonna say he's got to be somebody's dad. Wasn't that dad like a total goofball though?
No, he's the dad from that 70s show.
Yeah, that's closer. Although I would venture to put my dad as the dad from that 70s show, just sort of like the thinning hair, kind of crusty personality, generally good-hearted. I think Keller's just such a straight-laced guy. Let's see who.
Yeah,
Malcolm in the Middle's close.
Coach Keller is.
Dude, is Keller Frazier from the show Frasier.
Yeah, that's a good one.
Yeah, I think we're getting there. That one's a lot
super
closer.
Intellectual, little personality. Okay, so if Keller's Frasier, who's Niles? Niles is like Frasier's ultra nerdy elitist counterpart.
Trevin Wax.
Okay,
Trevin's too nice. Trevin needs to be. Trevin's another one who's like eternally boyish. So. We need to find him an eternally boy. He might be a Wonder Years.
Dude, Trevin has an eternally boyish name. Even when Trevin Wax is 93, we're going to talk about how boyish he is because his name is Trevin.
I've known a Trevor. I've never known a Trevin in my life. That's like that must be made up name.
Trevin, you're 12 forever with that name. With the name, you're 12. You're on a skateboard. You're riding your BMX bike like down to the drugstore to get a soda. You're 12 forever,
dude. Trevin Wax is like, I mean, that's not even his real name. Trevin's name is probably like William Smith, man, because Trevin Wax, it just sounds like made up name.
It's William T. Wax, and the T stands for Trevin. And
it's got to be that his dad wanted to name him Trevor, and his mom wanted to name him Kevin, and so they were like, just split the difference.
He just sounds like a character from an M. Night Shyamalan movie. I mean, it's insane.
Dude, what about
who's named Trevin
this?
Wax?
What about this? What about our boy Brett McCracken as Niles Crane? Like a lot of high end cultural stuff. You know, goes to the theater a lot.
He's not like a pinky out guy though.
He's not, man. That's the thing.
He needs to be in a more like sort of he's just sort of arty, reflective, that kind of thing. I'm trying to think. Look, there are plenty of elitists in the reform world. We're just not coming up with a name yet. It'll come to us.
It'll come to us.
What villain do we think John MacArthur is?
Now, John MacArthur. Not necessarily a villain. I've got actually two for John MacArthur.
He's like Tim the Toolman Taylor.
Or I was going to say the dad in Frasier. Remember the crusty old dad
who
was like an ex-cop, you know? It was always like, kids are so...
He's the dad from Everybody Loves Raymond.
Yes.
There you go.
Dude, Tim the Toolman Taylor, I would say, is Louis Giglio.
That's yeah.
Dude, that's Louis perfect. Giglio... Lou Giglio to me could be Slater from Saved by the Bell. Kind of slightly jacked. The clothes are a little bit too tight. Too Forever 21 on the clothes.
Yeah, even though he's pushing 60 or whatever.
Yeah, even though he's like 90 years old, he could still be AC Slater.
And he's got the name. Like Louis Giglio and AC Slater sound like those are totally equivalent names on the cool scale.
Giglio is AC Slater. Like that one, I'm locking that one in. That one's going in at pin. The other one that I had for MacArthur could be Coach from Cheers. Coach from Cheers was a little bit too lovable. But I'm thinking in terms of being like a little bit old and you know all of that. But Coach is too lovable. MacArthur's not quite lovable enough for that. What reformed guy plays Sam Malone from Cheers?
I never saw Cheers.
You guys
Cheers
is
a little bit before my day. I was more like Seinfeld, Friends.
Yeah,
that era.
Yeah. Okay.
Well, Cheers is my era. I just wasn't allowed to watch it.
Let's cast Friends with reformed people. Who's the? Okay, who's
no,
the
no,
Ross?
No, quick. Friends had too many female characters to cast as reformed people. There's no way
true.
We can pull this off.
Actually, Cheers is the ultimate like reform show, in that there was like a bunch of dudes and like one female character,
the token woman at the bar.
Exactly.
She was the children's minister.
Exactly. Oh man. So Friends, you've got the intellectual who doesn't actually do any work. That's Ross.
that's every reformed pastor.
The vapid, good-looking guy is Joey. So we could find probably a vapid, good-looking guy. And then they're like, dude, I got one. Who is the other guy on Friends who is always like the wisecracking?
Chandler Bing. You know?
Yeah, Chandler Bing is at Jared C. Wilson.
Wow.
Yeah.
I think he might take that as a compliment.
I think so too, which is why it came to me. You know, kind of cracking wise on Twitter. Chandler Bing, write it down in pen, at Jared C. Wilson. I feel really good about that casting choice. What do you guys have for me? Anything along the Friends lines?
I was trying to think of Seinfeld characters, and that's just too funny for the reformed world. There's just nobody who fits that. Maybe a George Costanza.
Yeah.
You know, John MacArthur could also be like Jerry's dad in that show.
I love it, dude. That may be the best fit yet for John MacArthur, for sure. Or John MacArthur could be the he could be Jack Klompas. Remember in the Seinfeld where Jerry goes down to the housing community in Florida where Del Boca Vista, where his parents have moved.
Yeah.
And there's the really angry older neighbor, Jack Klompas, who's always terrorizing Jerry. I think that's John MacArthur. That may get us even closer.
Francis Chan is clearly Kramer.
Okay. Dude, I love it.
The eccentric neighbor who you're always like, what is he doing? What's he up to these days? Like, what has he gotten himself into?
What is he up to? Like, kind of fell into money. I mean, you look at Francis Chan's career and what he's done, and you go, like, it's rained money on this guy, but kind of why? You know, like, how did we get there? Like, what happened? You know?
I mean, would you be surprised to find out that he keeps a rooster in his bathtub? Like, that?
Not at all.
That seems not at all. Reasonable.
Yeah. Really, nothing would surprise you from Frankie.
Exactly. That's why he's Kramer.
Frankie is Kramer. I love it. Boys, we are pushing an hour on this episode, and I know that the three of us are very important people. We have, believe it or not, more important things
Ronnie
to do.
Ronnie has a coaching appointment in 7 minutes. He's going to go. He's going to go do a conference call and get paid $1,000 for it. He's going to give him three principals, and then he's going to go sip coffee somewhere. So,
I love it. That's a job I want. All kidding aside, like
all kidding aside, that's a job I want too.
Baby, you could retreat every day of the year if you were a leadership coach. Think about that.
I know.
That's incredible.
I'd get paid to retreat every
You'd
day.
You'd get paid to retreat. You'd be leading retreats.
Yeah.
This is truly the space you need to be in.
Yes.
If I've said it once, I've said it 1,000 times on this program. But boys, we have done what we always do. We've wandered to and fro throughout these topics. It has been a lot of fun in spite of being 8 in the morning. And until next time, Rachel the Held Evans.
The Happy Rant is brought to you by Resonate Recordings. If you go to resonaterecordings.com, you can see the full range of services they offer. So if you're considering starting a podcast, they are the ones we recommend going with. Again, go to resonaterecordings.com to see their prices, to connect with them and ask any questions, and to see what they can do to help you launch, edit, master, and improve your podcast. Again, go to resonaterecordings.com to see what they can do to help you launch and improve your podcast.
Looking for ways to stay positive? Brighten your day with the free Story Behind podcast. Hear weekly short stories that showcase true joy, love, and hope. Listen now at lifeaudio.com or by searching for Story Behind wherever you get your podcasts.